King of the Ring is serious business.
A fabled history and heralded past.
I cannot believe this moment right here.
The King of the Ring.
Kings become champions.
You win the King of the Ring, you become an immediate player.
And champions become legends.
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
Eight men on the verge of superstardom. Only one will be crowned king.
Boy, a lot of emotions running high here tonight.
This is the most important thing in my life.
Are you great competitors going to get sucked into that old divide and conquer strategy?
Who the hell do you think you are? Defeat either one of the three of us, and that person will be the World Wrestling Federation champion.
This is going to be an interesting challenge. You just as
happy as
you, huh?
The WWF Championship is what I want.
That belt, it belongs to me.
Just bring it.
Six men, one championship.
It will be who wants it more.
And now, Subway presents the WWF King of the Ring.
Next, Jonathan Coachman interviews Gerald Briscoe. Briscoe is not happy that Coach thinks it's funny that he has to face Patterson wearing a dress. Briscoe says Pat will find out tonight. He's all man. A costume guy then comes in and presents Briscoe's dress to him and asks him if he likes normal panties or the crotchless kind.
Really?
Credit to the man. He says it with such a straight face.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. This is my match of the night.
This segment
is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Briscoe sells it magnificently. Oh, brilliant stuff. Brilliant. That's it.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it?
Brilliant!
Welcome once again to the Random Wrestling Review, and today it's a new era, it's a new day in the podcast history because we are through the WrestleMania series and out the other side into something different and wondrous and maybe a little bit more familiar to those long-term listeners who will have been with us when we did a random show weekly or bi-weekly or fortnightly. As we go into a new series of shows that should last all the way through to WrestleMania next year. Of course, we don't know when WrestleMania next year is due to happen. There's even rumors that it might happen in May, but fear not. This series can cater for that extension if required. That's how meaty this is going to be. Now, I'll get into that again as well later on, but first of all, let's get to the introductions because that will make my job a lot easier. First of all, we've got Rockstar Alex Kirkman. How are we doing?
Yeah, I'm really good. Really good. Bit tired coming out of an epic weekend, spending time with you guys in Bristol. But yeah, I got back a bit tired, but I'm good to go. I'm ready to go, yeah.
And oh man, you didn't have to do so much travelling, but you two are with us today.
I am indeed. Yeah, I didn't do so much travelling. I did have to drive to the GP's with a good lady today. And true to form, in the middle of the afternoon, they were running 48 minutes. It's over,
right.
So what turned into me taking an hour off of work turned into me basically taking the whole afternoon off. So I'm amped, I'm ready, I'm limber. We did go ages ago, and they were 10 minutes late, and it was the first appointment of the day. So brilliant, excellent work, mate. Excellent work. He was so chilled out, the man, as well.
That's probably why he was like, all right then, guys, how's it going? Well, it's enough talk about GPs, and let's talk about what we're going to talk about today, because we are covering King of the Ring 2000 on this week's show. The first, as I said, in our new series. Now, this new series, there is a rhyme and a reason for these episodes that we're going to be doing. There is a connection. There is something that connects every single one of these pay-per-views that we're doing in this series. Now, of course, our listeners won't have a clue what's coming up, but Alex and our man do know a little bit about what's coming up in terms of the next few shows. But try try to not kind of think about them too much and just take into account the event that we're covering and the event we've covered up to the point. Because what I'm going to ask you to do on most weeks is guess what the link is going to be, because that's going to be a sort of running competition as we go through. The thing I'm not sure of, though, is that at some point I'm imagining that some of our listeners will get it like straight away, will get the connection, whereas you losers may take a year for you to get it. It may even take me just telling you at the end of the year what the connection was. But who knows? You may surprise me now. So if anyone got anything, a wild guess they want to throw out?
I think they're all wrestling shoes.
He's got it in one. Damn it.
Fucking nailed it.
I gotta be honest, old man, I thought that I thought that it was gonna take a lot longer than that, because it's a bit more tenuous, if I'm honest. But that is true. That is at least true about these shows.
Obviously, we've seen the schedule and we've seen like the next 6 or 7 shows, and I haven't got a fucking clue.
Okay, good. Well, we'll see. As I said, our listeners are welcome to kind of try and guess. And as I said, some people might get it instantly, others may not. We'll find out. We'll find out as we go. So, King of the Ring 2000, what were our expectations going in? Why don't we start with you, old man?
It was strange, this, because I sat down, kind of got me dates wrong in the end. So I sat down, started watching this about 3 weeks ahead of the recording date. It was actually longer than that, because it was before WrestleMania 40. I started watching it and I sat down and it was just very strange. And I was oddly tentative going into it because, now, a couple of reasons. One, I knew that the aesthetics of the show were going to be very different. I knew that the standard of in-ring action was going to be vastly different to the current product and the stuff that we've been watching, because we've been watching the show of shows, the Showcase of the Immortals. So we've seen some top quality shit. And there was also a little bit that was like, there's going to be a fair bit of he who should not be named in this, I think. And there was a little bit of discomfort around that, which I can say that I got past quite early on. But yeah, that was kind of how I felt as I sat down to turn it on, the show, not myself.
I didn't realize you had such an aversion to Bull Buchanan, old man.
To be fair, I liked him in his B squared gimmick.
What about you, Alex?
Well, it's 2000 WWF, so it has to be good, doesn't it? It's the Attitude Era, my favourite time in wrestling, so I was super stoked for this. And I was especially super stoked to watch 3 Kurt Angle matches, one of which being a brutal encounter with Shane McMahon, only to realise after checking the schedule that I'd gotten the wrong year. So anyway, when I realised it was the King of the Ring with the 6-man WWE Championship tag match, I realised that was pretty much the only thing I remember from it. So I didn't have a clue about the tournament. So I was just excited to get stuck in and see if one of the best years of the Attitude Era was actually as good as I remember. But I'm the same as Sam. I did have a bit of an expectation that I wasn't looking forward to, and that seeing Vince McMahon in the Attitude Era. And when we did the WrestleMania 38 Night 2 review, it was quite uncomfortable watching Vince McMahon. I never thought I'd be like that, but leering over the cheerleaders in the ring just made me skin crawl, and I was a bit trepidatious to say the least. So let's get the first seed bomb out the way. Let's see if my love for the Attitude Era is tainted by the old cunt Vince McMahon.
It's funny, when you said about he who must not be named, my mind, after going to Voldemort, first of all, went to Chris Benoit. I was like, and for some reason, my brain hasn't yet acclimatized to the fact that Vince McMahon is a troublesome character. And I don't know whether that's just because he's been on screen for so long in my head that he's just, it's a different person or a different thing to the real life Vince McMahon. And also, I've also never called him, like a lot of people refer to him as his character, Mr. McMahon, but I've never referred to him as that. Whenever I've spoken about him, even on screen, I always talk about him as Vince McMahon. And I don't know if that makes a difference either. So my mind didn't instantly go to Vince McMahon when you said he who must not be named. But you're right, there is a lot of him in this, and we'll get to all of that as we go through. My expectations were not that high. I've very often been sort of said to people that 2000 WWF is the best year of WWF's history, both in terms of in-ring and in terms of overall creative. It was a year where Kurt Angle came up and really got a big push and was involved in an amazing feud with Stephanie and Triple H. You had the Jericho triple feud going through, not the Jericho, Triple H's triple feud, sorry, going through the year with Jericho, Kurt Angle and The Rock all the way through the year. And it was just phenomenal that they managed to weave these three three feuds in and out of one another. But we've seen a little bit contrary to my feelings on 2000 on this podcast, because we reviewed WrestleMania 2000, obviously, which wasn't a particularly high rated WrestleMania, as I seem to recall. We also saw No Way Out 2000, which we quite liked overall, but it wasn't like it was an amazing show overall. And now we've got this one. And my memory of this one was not that it was a particularly standout show in terms of the year 2000. So I was a little bit uncertain that we were going to get what we were going to get here. I didn't really know what the general quality was going to be, but I wasn't overly hopeful, I'm going to be honest. Now, in terms of talking points, I thought this is going to be quite difficult because my talking point is kind of the entirety of the King of the Ring tournament that takes place. And that's 7 of the 11 matches that they managed to squish into this 2 hours and 40 minutes. I mean, that's a far cry from what we've been seeing. WrestleMania 40 night 2 was 3.5 hours for 6 matches. This is 2 hours and 40 minutes for 11 matches. That's quite a turnaround for us. But the reason I wanted to talk about the King of the Ring tournament, there are two main things I was thinking. First of all, is that given the lineup where we've got Benoit, Guerrero, Angle and Jericho all in this tournament, you could be forgiven for hoping for more from the tournament. They don't exactly take advantage of the personnel involved here, is what I would say. But the other thing about it is that the reason they do what they do in the end, with Kurt Angle winning and beating Rikishi in the main event, is in the final, is surely to get Kurt Angle over, to push him up to that next level. In fact, I'm pretty certain that they made clear prior to this, or maybe even during the show, but I missed it, that the winner of this King of the Ring would go on to face the champion at SummerSlam. The only reason I assume that is because Kurt Angle speaks about it in one of his interviews. He says he's going to win the King of the Ring and go on to face the champion at SummerSlam. But then also he's watching the main event to see who wins the match because he knows he's going to face them at SummerSlam. And I was like, they haven't done a very good job of putting Angle over here during this show. Like, he gets 3 wins, but one of them is against Crash Holly in that last 4 minutes. Then you've got his final against Rikishi, and Rikishi's been severely weakened as the night's gone on by both Benoit and then Val Venus attacking him in previous matches. And then Angle beats him pretty simple. And I'm just like, why have they done that? Like, is Rikishi that important to protect in that final that you can't have Kurt Angle just beat a healthy Rikishi? And also, if you really want to protect Rikishi, why not save the Jericho match that Angle has for the final? And they can have 15 minutes in the final. It can be a bit more of a hard-fought battle. And even if Angle still has to rely on the interference of Stephanie McMahon, as he does in the first round of the tournament against Jericho, at least he's had to come through a pretty big challenge and got a victory over somebody in a lengthier match that will make people kind of feel like he's on that sort of higher level. But they really don't do anything for Angle here. Like, yes, he gets given 3 victories, but the quality of victory and the length of the matches leave you completely underwhelmed by any sense that this elevates Kurt Angle to a properly main event level. And he wasn't there by this point. They needed to do that, and they just failed. So that's really my talking point, is that the King of the Ring tournament fails in its absolute primary objective, which is to elevate Kurt Angle to main event level, to the point where you could buy him taking on the world champion.
Is the issue not kind of what you alluded to at the start, which is the 11 matches that are on the card? And I think they get about half hour left at the end for the main event with the entrances and everything. But I agree, I thought this was an extraordinarily underwhelming tournament in general, really. And I thought the same with Angle, because I didn't understand why they were protecting Rikishi. Like, it was just very strange. Like, I mean, I'm always happy to see Val Venus put a shift in on a card, so it was good to see that. But I also thought, if that's where you're going to go, what Angle needs to do is he needs to get in there. Like, Rikishi's a big old boy. He needs to get in there. He needs to angle slam him. He needs to check on the ankle lock, and it'd be done in 25 seconds if you're going to do that, because then that makes him look like a fucking badass. Whereas it just made it like, they've got the cool spot in the final with the belly to belly off of the top, but away from that, it's like Rikishi kind of has a semi comeback as well. And it was just like, you're not the guy here, mate. You're clearly not the guy, because of how they're attempting, like the way that the commentary team are talking about Angle. You know they're pushing him, but like, to your point, Tiki, they just don't do a very stellar job of it. And then going to be going up against one of the biggest stars in the business as well. And like, we'll get into the main event, but I thought that was a bit crap as well.
Well, whoever wins as well. Like, if it's The Rock, yeah. The Undertaker, or Triple H retains, he's going up against a category of wrestler higher, basically.
Yeah, well, or Kane.
I wasn't really including him as a category higher than Kurt Angle at this point, if I'm honest. But, you know, Kane was in a similar situation as Rikishi. Rikishi was there. Surely his only job was to put people over on the bridge to main event status. That's his position. So this was tailor-made for Rikishi to just give Kurt Angle a clean victory over him.
The only reason I can see why they're protecting Rikishi is that he's the IC champion, which I can kind of understand. But, you know, if they kept the same match that he has with Benoit and he gets the beatdown after, and then, as you said, just come into the next match with, if they made the Kurt Angle match a semi-final and it could just be a squash match. I mean, how I would have done it, like, I agree completely with regards to the booking's just, it's just madness. I just don't get it. After the Jericho Angle match, you know that there's only one winner. You know that Kurt Angle's winning the entire thing, even after that match. And I would have done it Jericho, Bo Buchanan in the first round. I'd have Jericho coming out right at the start of the night to get the pop. And then I'd have Val Venus and Eddie Guerrero, but I'd have Guerrero winning. And then I'd have Rikishi and Benoit doing exactly the same ending. And then Angle and Crash Holly. And then I'd have Jericho and Guerrero in the first semi-final. And then I'd have Angle and Rikishi in the second semi-final, having the squash that you said, Sam. And then Jericho Angle in the final. Because in that, the Jericho Angle match, I mean, we're going to talk about it later on, but Kurt Angle's the best in the tournament and Jericho's the most over. So it's going to be one of them winning it. So have that as your final. It just makes perfect sense to have that as your final. I couldn't get my head around it. In the first, you know, the first three matches, Rikishi, Val Venus and Crash Holly are advancing in this tournament. Yeah. And it's just absolute madness. It's crazy.
And what they managed to do is they managed to, especially Eddie, I thought, they really like cut their legs out from under him, where it was just like he was nothing. Like, we all know that I'm a fan of Val Venus's in-ring work. This is not one of his finer periods, but
how many fine periods did he have, old man? I mean,
he was IC champion, mate. I mean, come on.
True, for about a week, yeah.
I will say he's nothing without that porn star gimmick.
No, absolutely not.
Nothing without that. I mean, it was good in the right to censor, but nothing.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. And I'm like, you've got as well this weird thing where, like what you just said, Rockstar, Val Venus, Crash Holly and Rikishi all go through in the... So, and I know that you want to have two heels and two faces, but it just seems like such a waste of breath. I don't have a minute, to be honest. Like, if you're going to do it this way, don't bury. Then what is by disqualification, and there's a bit of history going into it, so I get that. I'm kind of all right with that. Eddie is a fucking nonsense, him losing. Like, he's in a pretty high profile spot because of his association with China at this point. And then, like you've both said about Jericho, it's like, why are you lobbing him against Angle in the first round? Have an angle where, no pun intended, where Jericho can't compete or something. Like Triple H gets fucked off with him and he wallops him with a sledgehammer just before the show. Don't make him lose in the first round. It didn't make any sense. Silly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that they were trying not to give away matches. That was their big thing. So they didn't want to give away a Benoit Guerrero match, for example, or whatever. But like, even if they were trying to avoid giving away new matches, there's a way to the final where they can have basically have Angle beat Crash in the first round, Rikishi face Val Venus in the first round, and they just do exactly what Rikishi and Val Venus did in their semi-final match, which basically ends up with Val Venus attacking Rikishi's arm, injuring Rikishi in the process, which then leaves Angle versus Rikishi in the semi-final, and Angle can beat Rikishi by taking advantage of the arm. So that's Angle to the final. The other side of the bracket, you have Jericho v Benoit. They've been wrestling each other all year already anyway. You've already had the match loads of times on pay-per-view. No problem at all. Just give them another match. Like, it's not a problem. And even have Jericho win this one, because I think Benoit won the majority of their matches in 2000. So you have Jericho win that one. Guerrero then beats Paul Buchanan, and then you can have Jericho and Guerrero against one another in the semi-final, give Jericho the win, and then move him on to face Angle, and then you get that quality matchup that, you know, you're looking for. In fairness, they weren't really pushing Guerrero that hard. He had an over act, and don't get me wrong, him and China were really over, but it was very much a kind of, you know, he was the European champion, wasn't he, at the time? So it was kind of like a very much like a tertiary level kind of gimmick that he was using at the time. So again, him and Jericho wouldn't have been a major giveaway. And I just feel like because the final was so unmemorable, and because Angle didn't do anything memorable on the way to getting to the final. There's nothing for them to go back and hang their hat on and say Kurt Angle just came through three massive matches at King of the Ring last night to become, you know, the number one contender. When they get to it on Raw and they give him the coronation, which they did on Raw the next night, it's a bizarre set of decisions, in my opinion. But the main one, I think, ultimately, is their decision that they needed to protect Rikishi, because, as I say, like, his primary role is in the company at this point is surely you're the bridge between the upper midcard and the main event. Put someone over and they get to that level.
I do love the thought of them all being sat in a room and like they're like, oh, what if like Rikishi goes out first round and he's like got this injury, and Vince is like, no, we gotta protect him, we gotta protect the big man, we've gotta keep him safe. And everyone's like, well, yeah, but we could just like get him out of this, and like we've already got the ankle on SmackDown, like maybe we can just use that. No, I want that to run through the whole show. Poor Rikishi.
I mean, I don't know who had the idea to have Bob Buchanan versus Crash Holly. I mean, so one of those two is going to be a King of the Ring semi-finalist. Bob Buchanan or Crash Holly is mental.
Mad, isn't it? It is mad. I mean, Crash was over, in fairness to him. Again, in a very much lower role than this should have been. I'm tempted just to carry on talking about the tournament in general rather than go to any other talking points, because it's the dominant part of the show. And I also wanted to talk about, and I wonder whether or not this might even have been one of your talking points, because I think you mentioned it, Alex, earlier on about the number of matches. Maybe it was you or man, can't remember. The fact that there are 11 shows on this 2.5 hour. Sorry, there are 11 matches on this 2.5 hour show. God, excuse me for any mistakes I make. I'm not talking very well because I've got a very sore throat. And so, yeah, I'm not going to be at my absolute best during this particular show. As you already know, having listened to the first 20 minutes of this particular pod. Yeah, there are 11 matches on the show. And the King of the Ring matches, is this the weakness of the single elimination tournament, having it over one night and there being 7 matches to put on, like i.e. quarterfinal, semifinal, and final? I think we've bemoaned that they got rid of it in the past, but having watched this, you can kind of see why they did, can you not?
Yeah, absolutely. That was to the point that one of you just made. Like, it's patently obvious who's winning as well. Like, as soon as all the big hitters go, apart from Angle at the start, even without knowing who won, I could have sat down and been like, oh yeah, cool, all right, Angle's winning. And you've then got another 3 matches to get through. And I think as well, like, I'm assuming they made something of it the following night with the coronation. Why are they not doing the coronation tonight? Not tonight. That'd be strange to be doing it this, to be doing it 24 years after the event. But like, on the night of the show, why aren't they doing the coronation? I don't understand. Like, it reeked to me of almost a fucking hell.
it's catching, old man.
Yeah, it reeked to me of a contractual obligation that they had to have King of the Ring, or they'd already advertised it. They're like, oh, we're gonna have to have this. And I'm with you, kind of what you said, Tiggy. I would have just had the semi-finals and the final. I would do that with all of them, I think, because the novelty has gone by this point for King of the Ring, I think. And it's a sideshow to the main event as well, which is a problem, I think. The King of the Ring, although there is a lovely video package before the final and at the start of the show in relation to the King of the Ring itself, which the one before the final is very good indeed. It's only about maybe a minute and a half, something like that, but it's really well put together. But it does feel like, yeah, all right, we're just like, this is just a vehicle to get to the main event, the show. And the way that they treated, as we've just covered, treated some of the bigger stars, the way that they didn't have the coronation on this night, which is that's all part of the fun, isn't it? A really sweaty wrestler having a gown put on them and then a crown, that's all part of it. And then they sit there all tired, exhausted from their activities, whereas at the end of the final, Angle basically rolls straight out of the ring, celebrates going up the ramp, and then he fucks off. It's like, all right, bye then. See you later, King. You're my king.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit odd. I just don't think they had the time for the coronation. I think they were like, well, we've got 2 hours, 40 minutes, 11 matches, can't put the coronation in there as well. And maybe also they thought it was a thing they could push or promote for the Raw the night after, like a ratings getter of some kind. I mean, I'm not sure that it would have particularly drawn me to watch the show. But maybe that was their theory, that some people would tune in specifically to see Kurt Angle's coronation.
The only thing with regards to that, just having the semi-finals on, Sean, it was my first ever talking point on WrestleMania 4 was talking about night-long tournaments. For me, there's just no sense of achievement. It's just to win a tournament, they've just won two matches, whereas the three matches just seems more of an achievement. So I'd prefer to have the quarterfinals and the semifinals and a final. It's just a filler in between. Like, we've got this tag team match where there's four teams and I don't know how long it goes for, like nearly 20 minutes. Well, it doesn't need to be that long. Just have a tag team match that lasts 7 or 8 minutes, maybe. The other tag match with the DX Dudley boys one, I think that's like 15 minutes. It doesn't need to be that long. That's where I think they should cut down. But yeah, I much prefer the quarterfinals, semifinals and finals. You could even have a quarterfinal draw and then Angle gets a bye into the semifinal, maybe. You know, I'm just spitballing ideas here just to cut the matches down, because they did that in the first one with Bret Hart. But yeah, I much prefer it when there's the quarterfinal. Like I said, the 14 man or 16 man or whatever it is too many. And then for me, the semi-final, final, it just doesn't seem to be that much of an achievement.
I think my issue is that you can't, and I think WWE are right in thinking this, that they couldn't make a main event out of any of the combination of these wrestlers at this time. I don't think Angle, Jericho, Benoit or Guerrero were at the point where you could make two of them into a important enough main event. When you've got The Rock and Triple H, who are just on fire this year in the company, you can't have them not be in the main event. I think this is my thing with the King of the Ring, is that people view it, and WWE themselves make it, a thing that you win to step up to the next level, as opposed to just being a really important thing to win on its own merit. And I think if you just promoted it at the King of the Ring as being this really prestigious tournament, and you put 8 or heck even 16 people into it, but they were the top 8 competitors in the entire company, and you said you have both world champions in it, for example, in 2024, you have both world champions in it, but neither of those belts are on the line, everybody's just gunning to win the King of the Ring, then I think you can make an 8-man tournament go all the way through the night, and you could have it as the main event, and you could make it the centerpiece of the entire show, and you wouldn't need to worry about other things. But it's the fact that it's positioned as a step up that means you can't really make it the main event, because it feels like an underneath prize as opposed to a really prestigious thing that you, as part of your career, will be desperate to win if you want to complete the set. Like, it should be as important as the Rumble or the world title, but just its own prize.
I think it might be with Triple H, because I believe Vince McMahon has never liked tournaments. So I can't remember, I've heard that. I've heard it before. Vince McMahon doesn't like tournaments, so he's not really invested a lot of interest into any of, well, you know, not any of, because the first ones were pretty good. But I mean, like, Billy Gunn won it the year before. Like, fucking brilliant. So he's stuff like that, he books them weak, just sort of, for me, he books them weak just so he can say, well, it just doesn't work this. Same as Survivor Series. He doesn't like Survivor Series, does he? So he's booked really shit Survivor Series, but so he can just say, yeah, well, it doesn't work, does it? But I think Triple H is, I think it'd be better with Triple H and the King of the Ring that's coming up in Saudi Arabia. I think that they're going to be quite good. I think that they're going to be full of, they're going to be stacked. I mean, I might be wrong, but that's what I think.
That's not going to be 8 people in a tournament in one night, because they're doing the King and the Queen. No way they're going to do that. So they're probably going to have it so that your first rounds are on the SmackDown, because that's in Saudi Arabia as well, and then you have your semi-finals for both at the show itself, the King and Queen of the Ring show, and the final, obviously. Maybe it be in the main event. But it still won't be an eight person tournament either way. I think ultimately what a tournament like this requires is, first of all, for you to make it really important, and secondly, for you to really invest in the sporting achievement element of it. If you can't do that, then it's just worthless. It's just like, who cares? Like, who's Kurt Angle beaten that makes him special for having won this King of the Ring? You know, okay, Jericho, but he had to have Stephanie's help to do that anyway, and it lasted like 10 minutes. So it wasn't like an epic battle or anything. And then he's beaten Crash Holly and a weakened Rikishi. Like, it doesn't do what they want it to do for him. So the match is, the show starts with Rikishi versus Chris Benoit, the opener of the tournament. That only goes for 3 minutes and 25 seconds and ends when, Benoit just decides to get himself disqualified by hitting Rikishi with a steel chair. They kind of lean on the fact that Benoit just lost the Intercontinental title to Rikishi on SmackDown or something, I think maybe even the week before. And then after the match, Benoit hits a flying headbutt despite a whole host of officials standing in the way. Kind of, they part for him as he kind of lands on Rikishi. It's quite funny. And yeah, that's the opening match. A not particularly auspicious way to begin things, I would suggest.
No, it was just bollocks, wasn't it? I just didn't. Also, they telegraph what's going to happen because they show kind of what's happened on SmackDown the night before. And I just thought that's just really, really weird. And I also wrote down that it's just odd to have someone drop a title 3 days before this to then have them face off in the quarterfinals. And for then the person who lost the title to go, I know the smart way to go about this is to get myself disqualified out of the tournament, that if I win, I'll get a world title shot. It's just like, this isn't, I mean, Christ, like, it's just fucking weird. Just fucking weird. Just,
well, no, bollocks. Don't forget, old man, he explains just a bit later on in a backstage interview. He says that the world already knows that he's the greatest technical wrestler in the history of the WWE, and now they know that he does what he wants when he wants. But clearly, but clearly he doesn't want to win the WWE title because that would have been the prize for winning this tournament.
Yeah, just a very, very strange. So they were very clear, and JR presses it as well, the time limit. So there are 15-minute time limit, and only the winner progresses. So having pretty much forgotten what happens on the show, I was like, oh, maybe they're going to do that. Maybe they're going to do a little sneaky time limit draw. And then I was like, a time limit draw between Rikishi and Benoit? 15 minutes? I thought, oh, I don't want this. So I was actually quite relieved. I was very confused during this match, to be honest, just in general.
Nothing much to say about it, really. It hasn't already been said. It was just a nothing match. One little thing that I did like, the commentators explaining that the order of the matches had been randomly drawn. I thought, I love little things like that. Just little things that make sense. That just, you know, I love all stuff like that. Unprotected chair shots are in that era, aren't we? We can't avoid it. It is what it is. Yeah, hard-hitting stuff, short and sweet, but it wasn't even sweet. It was just a nothing match, really. Not a great way to start a show.
No.
Problem with that random drawing that they talked about is that I actually think it probably was random, given the way the tournament unfolded. It's almost like they went, oh, do we know what we're doing here tonight, lads? Nah, let's just pull them out of a hat, and then when we see what we've got, we'll figure out a way to get them to the final. Yeah, not a great way to start. A cool little German suplex, well, little big German suplex by Benoit on Rikishi, but that was about it. We had Michael Cole straight after this match talking to Linda McMahon, and she says that she's here to something her husband. Goodness me, I don't know what that could be.
Oh, no.
Control? No, don't think it's control. Something weird. Anyway.
Confront.
Confront. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's what it is, and then.
It's a very strange reaction.
No, it was actually, I had in mind, there's an episode of Red Dwarf where Lister is reading a letter from Rimmer's mum to Rimmer, and he's like, I'm writing to inform you that your father is dad, and he's like, what? This handwriting's terrible. And Rimmer figures out, he's like, dead. And he's like, what's that? Dead. Sorry, my father is dead. Yeah, that's what it is. It's an E. That's so that was going through my head when I said it. Anyway, backstage, then we have the McMahon office with Shane, Steph, and Triple H. The group are concerned that Vince McMahon will lose his cool now that Linda has arrived and give away some of their leverage that they feel they have in the main event. This is where McMahon starts to rear his cunty head.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. What an horrible cunt he is. Honest to God, it was making me feel so uncomfortable.
I don't think I paid a huge amount of attention to it, to be honest. So the second quarterfinal takes place is Eddie Guerrero versus Val Venus. Oh, man, we've only seen Val Venus prior to this show. We'd only seen him 4 times on the pod up to this show. He increased the amount of matches we've watched of his by 50% during this show. And that's because he won this one, gets the victory after Val Venus tries to hit China. China blocks the punch and then hits him back. But then that led to a near fall for Eddie Guerrero. Venus, though, then managed to hit a fisherman suplex and got the pin to eliminate Eddie Guerrero. This match lasted 8 minutes and 5 seconds. What do you think of this one, Alex?
This was all right, actually. Not a bad little match, this. God knows what Val Venus's music is about. I bet you were fuming, Sam, when it...
Yeah, strange choice. I can't remember. Is this the like club remix of his?
Yeah, this is the
Hello Ladies music.
This is the Charlotte Flair to the Ric Flair version.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It is, isn't it? That's a great comparison. Yeah, it is. I've got a couple. I've got a note about the fellow in the crowd with no top on and a suck it written on his body with an arrow pointing down to his nether regions. I thought that's incredible. Fair enough. Fair play to him. We want Puppy's champ starting. Brilliant. I'm saying that very sarcastically. And then, yeah, the fisherman suplex for the win is a thing of beauty, to be fair. But yeah, another big hitter. Eddie Guerrero goes out. Madness. Absolute madness. It was all right this match. It was okay. It was better than the first one anyway.
Yeah, well, that's damning with faint praise. So I had an issue. I had an issue with this because the commentators say that Val Venus knew that he was facing Eddie Guerrero on Thursday, but they said that they'd drawn the matches earlier that day. And I was like, oh, you've kind of let yourself down here.
Continuity error.
Yeah.
So, no, I think, right, so with the random drawing of the matches, I think that it was what order the matches are going to be on. Because obviously, if you're on first, I suppose you get a bit of an advantage because you have a longer rest than if you're on last. That's what I took from it as that.
That's fair. Okay. You know what? You know what? I think it's bollocks, but we will give them the benefit of the doubt on that. Yeah. I haven't really got a lot more to add, to be honest. Over in there, there was a superplex to Val Venus. That looked a struggle for both of them. It's a real struggle, apparently. And then I've just put, lovely to see a fisherman suplex win a match because it brought back memories of another man with great, slightly curly blonde hair, Mr. Perfect. The rumor is that him and Val Venus could have been brothers from another mother, or the same mother, actually. That would probably make more sense. Big age difference, so probably not. But yeah, that was pretty much what I thought when I was watching this match.
I bet it's not quite as big an age difference as you think.
No, I am going to now look it up. So yeah, if you give me, if you give me a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's not too much of an age difference. Yeah, this was very run-of-the-mill. This felt like a TV match, basically, the kind of match you'd see on Raw or SmackDown pretty much every week at the time. I will say that the people that we'd seen so far, Rikishi, Benoit, Guerrero, and Venus, were all over to an extent. Even Val, perhaps the least over of the lot at this point. And I put that down to his terrible, terrible nightclub dance remix of what he originally had as a theme. But it was okay, but it was so run of the mill, really. If it wasn't part of a tournament, you'd say instantly this doesn't belong on a pay-per-view.
I think that's entirely fair. But in more important news,
oh, here we go.
13-year age difference between them.
Okay. A bit more than, but still possible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, given modern technology, well, perhaps that's the new technology that Hogan was talking about to help people prolong their fertility. They're making another Mr. Perfect, and they're going to call him Val Venus. Oh my God, brother!
So that must be a callback to WrestleMania 7, 6, something like that.
It is. It's WrestleMania 7. There's going to be another callback, I think, later on as well.
We didn't even cover that during the WrestleMania series. That was one of the ones we covered before WrestleMania. That's how far you're going back there.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
I can just remember. I think it was Tom was just like, he's like, what's this new technology he's talking about? And we were just befuddled completely, turns out. It was prolonged fertility.
Just before we move on, I have got a bit of a question for you that you might know the answer to, because
I am incredibly fertile. Yes.
Right, excellent. Yeah, that's it. That's what I wanted to know. That's it. Move on. No, so before that match, Benoit gets interviewed and the WWF isn't bleeped or blurred out. And when I've seen stuff on the network, I'm pretty certain that it is bleeped and blurred out on shows before this. And I don't know why it isn't in this. I don't understand why it's not.
Yeah, the whole censorship of the F from the WWF is one of the weirdest, most inconsistent things there's ever been. I always understood that it was the WWF and the Scratch logo in particular that was sort of a problem. And yeah, the initials WWF, so they could say World Wrestling Federation, no problem at all, but the initials were the problem.
Yeah.
But you're right. If it wasn't blurred out during this, that makes no sense, because we've seen so many examples of it being blurred out and muted through on commentary. If someone says the WWF champion, they can get muted.
Yeah. I've not always wondered why, but don't know.
So I believe, and I only think this and now believe it, because I believe in myself, that there are a limit to how many times it can be used in shows. And I think there is some loophole where if it's continuous, it counts as like one thing. It's very odd. Like, because I've seen it where they've had it in the bottom through the whole show, but then it's been on screen and they blurred it out as well. Like, so you've got the same thing on the screen and they blur out one. Yeah, it was when old, what's his face, old Cocaine Tony paid for Final Countdown to be used for Bryan Danielson. Whatever his name is, and he paid for it so it could be used forever, but they could only use it that one time forever. And I think it might have been part of the lawsuit settlement, which is fucking weird. I'm sorry, that's just so fucking weird. Like, oh yeah, you can use it 32 times on a show, but if you use it 33, we're going to sue your ass. It's like, what? Just let him use it. It's already been and gone, isn't it?
I wonder with the WWF thing though, because I understood that they had an agreement with the World Wide Fund for Nature that meant that they could use it, but it had to be kind of limited. They couldn't overuse it. That was my understanding at the time. And the World Wide Fund for Nature were like, well, you've breached our agreement because you've massively overused it. So maybe the settlement for this was based on the original agreement or something, and they were like, well, you can still use it as many times as you, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is really bizarre. It doesn't make any sense, any kind of sense. So then we have backstage Pat Patterson with Seamstress talking about the various items that he could wear during his evening gown hardcore match later in the show. Now, even though this was undeniably WWF kind of putting Pat Patterson in a position where they could mock his homosexuality, Pat Patterson still does a stunningly good job of performing here.
Yeah.
He's still very, very, very good.
Yeah. When he says size 6 would be perfect.
Yeah.
I had a little cackle. I was just, because he properly goes with it, doesn't he? Like you said, Tinky is an extraordinarily horrible, really. It's basically a form of bullying, isn't it? That they're effectively doing with him. But he plays it so well that you're like, you know what? This is a bit of good fun, this.
Although, of course, Pat Patterson himself is a little bit of a problematic person, are to believe accusations that are out there over the last couple of years. So, I mean, you can't get away from it on this show, I'm afraid. You've got them all over the place. Then Coach interviews Rikishi backstage, and Rikishi says that he is looking forward to his next match despite the attack by Benoit earlier.
Hated it, because he completely no-sells the beatdown.
Yeah.
Like, completely. And I'm like, fucking hell, mate. Like, at least, like, rub your shoulder a bit. Oh, I'm hurting. Because he's in that crossface for bloody ages.
Mm.
He's in it for about half an hour. Fucking hell. Come on, Rikishi.
That's the problem with the show, then, isn't it? He was in that for half an hour. He could have been in it for 5 minutes. That would have done.
I was about to say, come on, Rikishi, you're better than that. But I think probably not.
The jury's out. Then we get to the next quarterfinal, Crash Holly versus Bull Buchanan, and Bull Buchanan pretty much dominates this until Crash manages to avoid a scissor kick and then gets the pin and runs out of the building instantly in 4 minutes and 7 seconds. There are some boring chants in the four minutes that it takes us to play out. And you know what, right? I don't mind boring chants at the appropriate time, but if you get bored within 4 minutes, we've really got a problem, haven't we?
Well, there is a JR is talking about old B squared, and he said he's young, and then he pauses. I was like, is he going to say young, dumb, and full of cum? but he didn't, which was a bit disappointing. And kind of to echo your point, my highlight was Crash running off immediately after the three. So it was absolutely wonderful. Don't understand the crowd being. It's boring. It was fine. It was absolutely, what are you expecting? It's Crash Holly and Paul Buchanan. It's not fucking Bruno San Martino and Pedro Morales, is it? Is it? I've never seen any of their shit, so I don't know. Is it?
Could be. In fairness, this did remind me of the classic Buddy Rogers Bruno San Martino collisions from the early 60s.
The thing that popped me with regards to the commentary, and it's going to take us back to the episode of Pro Wrestling Moments that we were on, Sam, when JR said, the United Kingdom, that includes Wales, Ireland and Northern Ireland, and my note is, take that, Scotland.
and also Ireland, who are not part of the United Kingdom.
Yeah. So that may be popping. I'm sure if Mr. Coriander watched it, I think it would make him pop as well, seeing the way he hates him. It did dawn on me in this match that it's 24 years ago, and every single match, unfortunately, has had someone who's passed away. So we've had Crash Holly in this one, Chris Benoit, mm-hmm. Eddie Guerrero, China, and Pat Patterson, all been on screen and all now passed away, unfortunately. It's only 24 years ago, which obviously is a shame. But yeah, me know. Yeah,
come on, keep it light. Fucking hell.
Tell a joke.
Quick. Joke about the dead. For God's sake.
I'm not doing that. Yeah, me not.
You've clearly never listened to this before, Alex. Come on.
No. Yeah.
Make a joke about the dead cunts. Come on. Fucking hell.
I can't do that. I'm a wholesome guy.
That's awful. If anything, I've almost taken it too far.
Yeah, I mean, Crash wins and runs brilliant. That's all. That's my note for this match. Bo Buchanan's just crap. No charisma whatsoever. I'd put a crap match overall. And our three semi-finalists, Rikishi, Val Venus and Crash Holly. Not very inspirational, that.
I suppose it is inspirational if you're a perennial mid-carder.
Yeah. If you're someone who can't get over, then you're in great,
you've got
a great chance
in
the future.
You know what, lads? I reckon we might have gone through this round.
Damn right.
No, you know what, lads? I think I did go through this round. I managed it. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, no, there was nothing to say about this. Crash Holly, I can understand. Crash Holly was an over character. They did well to get somebody like Crash Holly and find a niche for him, and he got over. But what the hell is Bull Buchanan doing anywhere near this tournament? He should just not be on the pay-per-view. A very, very strange situation.
And they also make him look stupid. And it's like, what are you trying to achieve with this young man? He's young, according to JR. Like, and that's it. That's all he's got going for him. Good. Well, I know he's not proper bold either, is he? He's not committed at this point. He's still got some little tufts.
He was previously of the Truth Commission in 97 as either Sniper or Recon. I can never remember which one.
Was he really?
Yeah. And they, the two of them, then got dumped by the Jackal and Kurgan beat them up in a kind of an angle on Raw. And then they went through about three or four other gimmicks. They were still called Recon and Sniper, but they did lots of other gimmicks as a tag team. And one of them was like someone like the Vampires or something like that. They just went through some fucking weird gimmicks as a tag team. Quite funny.
So he was Recon. I mean, this is good shit. I didn't know this. And I've also just learned that Paul Buchanan's real name is Barry Buchanan.
Barry.
Right. So he wrestled for WWE under Recon, Paul Buchanan and B Squared, and appeared in All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling something. Well, I can't see what it says. So, I mean, he worked all of it.
I love me some Pro Wrestling something.
It's actually Pro Wrestling Noah.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And, yeah, he's a former WWF Tag Team Champion, All Asia Tag Team Champion, GHC Tag Team Champion, and USWA World Tag Team Champion.
There you go. He's done a lot.
Can't argue with that. Yeah, cannot argue with that. And he's got a kid who's called Brooks Jensen, who apparently wrestles for NXT. NXT, NXT, fucking hell. And she's, sorry, it's a he. It's not his daughter. He was a one-time NXT UK Tag Team Champion with Josh Briggs. There you go.
I've also learned some of his ring names. Obviously, we've had the Recon and B Squared, the Punisher, Sam McGraw, but my personal favourite, Lord Humongous.
Oh, nice. I mean, I can't believe they didn't take advantage of the name Barry, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Barry Brett was one of his ring names. It's not as good as Lord Humongous.
Lord Humongous. I mean, that's a lot to live up to, isn't it?
Well, I think we'll cover the next match. And before that, the backstage shenanigans continue because Vince confronts Linda. Vince lists off all the reasons Linda has been a thorn in his side over the years. And this was quite good because they called back to loads of story stuff from the previous two or three years. Linda challenges Vince to make sure that he, Shane, and Triple H fight 3-on-3 against The Rock, Kane, and The Undertaker in tonight's main event. Vince says that nobody questions his testicular fortitude and so promises that there will be no interference in the match, but says that the other team won't be able to get on anyway, so it won't be a problem.
I mean, yeah.
Cool. Kurt Angle then comes to the ring and says he's going to do something that was very rare in Boston. He's going to bring home the big one. Or what the Bostonians would say is, I'm fat, I'm unemployed, now get me another beer. Oh, the simplicity of it.
And also Jericho then follows up and he just says to Angle, he says some stuff and he says, and that's true, Jerky. And for some reason, Jerky really made me laugh for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, but the stuff before it wasn't very good, was it?
Now, of course, it's Jericho, mate. It's Jericho on pay-per-view. It's shit, isn't it?
This was the first of two things that I found to be incredibly dated about things that are not kind of controversial. They're just dated because they are very good. Like, Jericho was very popular at the time, and these catchphrases really got over with the fans. But, you know, when we watched a match from, I don't know when it was, some time ago now, I was always embarrassed at how bad his pre-match stick was. This wasn't as bad, but it still was really dated for me.
Might just cross out half the page of notes that I've written here then.
Oh, go on, do it.
Let's have some passion.
Well, I'll preface it with, I know that there's been some very unsavoury things said about Mr. Jericho recently that I don't really know a lot about because I don't want to. And there is some unfortunate foreshadowing at the end of this match when he sexually assaults Stephanie in the ring. And that's which I'm ashamed to say, at the time, probably popped a little 18-year-old rock star when I was watching this in my friend's house. But I was reminded here why I fucking love him so much. I just got such a warm, nostalgic feeling when I saw him here. And it was similar to when I first saw him in 99 when he interrupted The Rock. I just fell in love with him instantly at that. With that. The crowd fucking love him. And he knows exactly how to get a pop out of him. And it's like, this was my Chris Jericho, this. And I used to pop every time he won, and I hated it when he lost. And I've always been a bit of a face guy, and I just thought he was brilliant at the time. And like, don't get me wrong, I loved his heel work as well, but I was still riding the Y2J bandwagon at this time, and I was loving it. And I got, like I said, just got a really warm, nostalgic feeling when he come out here. Absolutely love him.
Thank goodness you said the word bandwagon then. I was worried there was going to be something else. The thing about this match for me was that, I know I haven't even spoken about the match yet, so goodness knows what I'm doing, but this is the fourth quarterfinal of the tournament. It goes for just under 10 minutes. Kurt Angle gets the win. There's a whole bunch of shenanigans at the end. So basically, Jericho counters an Angle slam with the Walls of Jericho. Stephanie runs to the ring, distracts the referee as Angle taps. Angle then knocks Jericho into the referee. Steph misses Jericho with a belt shot and then and accidentally hits Angle instead. Jericho then forces himself on Steph after she tries to slap him, and Angle then hits the Angle slam for victory. And I was going to say, the thing about this match is that it probably would be my match of the night had it not been for that bit where Jericho forces himself on Stephanie. And you know what? I've been quite unaffected by stuff that doesn't fit the time that we now live in, but for some reason this really stuck out to me. There was just something about it, and I think it was just the delight with which everybody took it. So I mean, like, we've seen, and I'm sure there have been other examples of this exact thing happening that were received exactly the same way, but it was just the pure delight that everyone took in Jericho doing what he did. And it just made me feel a little bit odd, like, and similarly to you, Alex, I'm sure at the time I popped for it, but it certainly made me feel quite strange watching it. So yeah, that kind of put me off a bit. And contrary to you, Alex, Angle was my guy at this point in time. I absolutely loved Angle. I just thought he was just phenomenal. Loved everything about him. But it was certainly the best thing we'd seen up to this point.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty good, to be honest. I agree with the both of your sentiments about the end bit. Same as well. I would have popped for it. I would have found it hilarious when I was, what would I have been, 16, 17, whatever. I was an age that I'm not now. There's a lovely, lovely German suplex with a bridge by Angle, of course. The Walls of Jericho pop, naturally, which is fucking blows my mind every time. He gets him in position and the crowd are like, fucking put it on him! Put it on him! I'm like, it's a shit Boston Crab, guys! Come on! Come on! Bloody heck! A horrendous belt shot by Stephanie to Angle.
Yeah, because the timing's all off. Like, he ducks, and about 4 seconds later, Angle gets hit.
Yeah, really, really poor. But this is best thing by a mile to this point. And it did, when I finished watching it, I did kind of think, I was like, what are we getting this better than that? Because the main event is obviously going to be a bit of a schmoz in my mind anyway. And then I was like, and then you got the other fucking cunts in the tournament. And I was like, oh, this feels like a bit of a waste so early in the card. But I enjoyed this. This is Jericho on good form. Don't happen often, but I'll give him his flowers. Fuck off, Jericho. Fuck off and donate more money to Donald Trump, you twat.
Anyway, moving on from that. Well, I mean, it, compared to the other matches, this is how you do a match. It's great, great stuff. It's quick, slick, fantastic stuff. Angle, listen, I'm a Jericho guy, but fucking Angle is so good. In terms of, like, Matt Technician, he's probably the best, second only to Brett. And then I wrote here, imagine a Kurt versus Brett match in the prime. Fucking hell. But again, I mean, we spoke about it. It's really good, but, you know, once it's finished, that's it. Because Angle's winning the whole thing, so it's just... Everything just dips after this. It has to be Kurt Angle after this match. But yeah, it's a fantastic match. And sexual assault aside, which hasn't aged well in the slightest, this is a great match. And it is my match of the night.
It's aged about as well as Chris Jericho.
Oh, lovely. That's lovely.
Can't help who I like, can I?
Oh, no, you're absolutely fine, mate. I'm a big fan of Venus Sky. He's a utter cunt.
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, they are, well, most of them are anyway, aren't they? And what, I mean, he needs to stop wrestling now. Just stop it. Just needs to stop wrestling now. But like I said, I just got such a good feeling, such a warm feeling when I saw him here, because it just took me back to a time when I just thought he was the best thing ever.
I'll tell you what, right, and I'm not, sorry, Rockstar. I'm not ragging on him now, but this is very much this is a respect thing. He is a very limited performer, very limited, who managed to get over at one point and managed to stay pretty over with the crowd for a long period, and still, even when he wasn't, he still maintained a certain level in like WWE, and then obviously moved on, did some New Japan stuff, and then went to AEW. I know it was all kind of going to shit, but he's done a heck of a bit of business for himself, hasn't he, by staying this relevant for this long, given that his last good match was probably in 2008. Like, that's probably an exaggeration, but yeah, like, he's quite incredible, really. It's amazing what sucking off Vince McMahon 3 times a week will do for you, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing. Listen, I've never said that he's the best, never. He probably won't even go in my top 10 best wrestlers, but he's my favourite. There's a big difference between best and favourite.
Mm-hmm. You don't need to justify it, Rockstar. So I don't fucking matter who your favourite is. Fuck everyone else.
The thing that stood out to me that I didn't enjoy about Jericho here, and he actually did, Edge did the same thing in the tag match, his spinning heel kick is not a spinning heel kick. It's a I'm going to put my thigh into your face. That's what it is. It's not anything. There's no kick. There's no heel involved in it at all. So it's a very poor move. Edge does it exactly the same, and neither of them do it properly. It's just, it's lazy. Well, it's worse than Viscera's.
No, I was going to say, there's only one person who did it properly, and that was Viscera.
You're bloody right.
Yeah.
Oh, he's fallen over. Oh, no.
They've done it with style, though, old man. Come on. So, yeah, we will, I think after that, that's the first round of the King of the Ring tournament sorted. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about the rest of the show.
I don't like any of these. I'm stuck. I've got to do that. I can't help it, you know. And if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. You know, I mean, look at this dress. Undertaker can get into that dress. That's way too big. Look at this. This was way too big. Size 6 would be perfect for me. Black, I don't like. This is what my grandmother would wear. I can't take that. I don't know. What is this? Michael Jackson's miniskirt? I wonder how many chicken died for that. I need something from Hollywood. I need something that's going to make me look thin, sexy. I've got to look better than Briscoe. I'm the champ.
Pat, I'm good, but I'm no miracle worker.
What are you trying to tell me? What are you trying to tell me?
Jerry, tonight you have to have some mixed emotions. I mean, you have a chance to win your hardcore title back, but you have to do it in the first ever hardcore title evening gown match.
You think that's funny, Coach? You think that's funny I got to dress like a woman? You think that's funny I got to go out in front of all these people in a dress? Well, let me tell you something. The only emotion I have running through my head right now is the emotion of revenge.
Well, technically, Jerry, revenge isn't an emotion. It's
Shut
more
up, Coach, and listen to me. Pat Patterson stole my hardcore title under the guise of friendship. But I guarantee you one thing. Patterson's gonna find out tonight that I'm all man.
Mr. Briscoe, your evening gown and pumps have arrived. Would you like the regular panties or the crotchless kind?
Oh my. Crotchless!
Okay, welcome back to the show. And we are continuing on with King of the Ring 2000. And we once again are backstage with those terrible McMahons because Shane is speaking to Vince McMahon and tells Vince that he did not keep his cool and now they won't have any outside interference. Vince says that The Rock, Kane and The Undertaker cannot work together and he tells Shane not to worry. Shane says that he's not worried about him, but he's worried about Triple H and whether he is concerned about the match later on. We then get some footage from WWF New York where Mick Foley is at the bar and Ivory is bartending. Don't know how Ivory got that job. She gives Foley a half-finished beer because it isn't that ain't full, that's for certain. Meanwhile, Foley can't hear JR and we can't hear Foley. Lawler asks Foley where he got his haircut because he doesn't want to make the same mistake and go to the same place. That was it, really, there.
Yeah, disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, washout. Do you know, when I was younger, working at the Royal Bank of Scotland during the day, I had a second job as a barman at the Beaumont Arms Ladybridge in Bolton. And me, my best mate Lee, shout out to him, and a lovely girl called Alison, were the kings and queen of pulling pints. And it goes without saying that if I'd have poured a pint like Ivory did, I'd have been disgusted with myself. Absolute disgrace. But seeing how it's 2000, maybe we need to make a joke about the giving head instead.
Sexist.
Sorry. I would have been fired for pulling a pint like that if I'd have done that when I worked at my local. Absolutely disgraceful. We then get Edge and Christian come out. Christian takes the mic as they do their pre-match stuff about the for those with the benefit of flash photography, which will obviously be a dated reference itself. He talks about sports memories, which are backhanded compliments to the people of Boston. Edge and Christian then do a pose of the Red Sox and a moment in the World Series, which cost them said series. Lots of people falling back on the your sports teams are rubbish, Boston. message, which I guess they were at the time. So
I did also quite like this. I really like the 5 second pose because I thought it's just cheap, isn't it? It's very cheap.
I like that.
And I just thought it was also actually, if you didn't know, then it's actually I knew about it, but if I didn't, I would have searched it out and then you see the terrible moment that it happens and it's like, oh God, and the agony that it must have created for so many people. Good stuff. Good heel work.
Good stuff. Agony. We love agony.
Love it.
Then it's time for the WWF World Tag Team title, Four Corners Elimination Match. Too Cool are defending the titles against Christian and Edge, TNA and the Hardy Boys in a match that goes for 14 minutes 11 seconds. Now, it should be said this is an elimination match, which means that it's not first fall to a finish, which was a welcome from one perspective, but did mean the match was a bit longer than maybe it needed to be for some. The first team to be eliminated were Tess and Albert when the Hardy Boys got rid of them. Edge and Christian then eliminated the Hardy Boys, and then eventually Edge and Christian won the match overall when a Grandmaster Sexay hits a Tennessee Jam on Edge, but with the ref trying to get Scotty Too Hottie out of the ring, Christian hits Grandmaster Sexay with the bell and Edge pins him. We have new champions. Oh, man.
All right, wasn't it? It was fine. I thought there's a moment where Brian Christopher spits in Christian's face, which I thought was very strange. A really strange thing for people to do in life, really. But especially for a face. So I was like, oh, that's very strange. But it just felt, it was really clear who was winning because the Hardys were a little bit over. Too Cool are obviously over in that way that people like their dancing and they like their little movesets. But it felt pretty obvious to me that Edge and Christian were coming out of this the champions. And it kind of achieved that. Just didn't really do anything for me. And there's kind of like a theme in this whole show, which is where everything is at breakneck speed. And this match is exactly the same. And I think I was just a bit tired by this point. And I also had zero interest in watching it. I've seen enough Edge and Christian Hardys and Too Cool to last me a lifetime. But they've got some really, really good stuff. And this was nowhere near any of that really, really good stuff. But you did have Test and Albert in it. So I was a bit like, oh, you know what? I'm a bit soft on that. But yeah, it was fine. It happened. It was all right.
You know, I said on the Mania 15 episode that I was quite the testicle, as it were. And do you know what? I don't mind Albert either, you know. Saddled with crap gimmicks, but I don't mind me some of Albert. He's pretty quick for a big guy. And everything that he did, it looked like it hurt, which is the point of wrestling, isn't it? So I don't mind Albert. And they're a pretty serviceable tag team with Trish Stratus as well. But I think they didn't last that long after this. They didn't really have that much of a good run, but they should have done, really. I didn't mind them at all.
The fucking biggest TNA guy in the business.
Yeah.
Over it. Fucking 24 years later, he's finally putting him over.
Well, you know what happened, don't you? You know why they didn't last very long? It's because they aren't at autumn yet. If they'd have got to autumn, then Test would have got his annual push and they'd have been gone through the roof.
That's true. I did see a sign where someone had took a sign saying, "Trish, I want your TNA." And when I saw it, I thought, you've got to give credit to the guy that will take a sign like that. And there's got to be a little bit of an inkling of him where he thinks that Trish is going to see the sign and go, "Oh, yeah, go on. I love that sign. I'll run away with you." Got him. He's got him. Got to think that. But yeah, fair play to that guy. I've got some other signs as well that I'll mention later on. Obviously, Attitude Era, so signs galore. But I mean, yeah, it was all right. It was all right. Frantic end for the first part with also men assaulting women. And the Swanton Bomb is the only redeeming feature that Jeff Hardy's got for me. But it's Edge and Christian that steal the show. Absolutely fantastic. Near the end, Christian dancing. And that has got to be the best worm spot of all time, that one, where Christian does it and then Scotty Tuohy does it. Edge is cracking his arses on show too much for my liking. But overall, not a bad match. And Scotty Tuohy is selling right at the end. He's absolutely sensational. But yeah, it was okay.
I mean, I don't think I'm particularly high on this match in comparison with you, but it was my match of the night, to be honest, for me. But I, like you, old man, was like, oh. It's really odd. We look back at the Christian Edge, Hardy Boys, Dudley Boys era of tag team wrestling and think it was a golden period, and it was. But as a consequence, we've seen them all wrestle so many times against each other, and I just like, I don't know if I can really be bothered to sit through this. So that, I guess in some ways, I was quite glad for Too Cool and TNA's presence, because they did at least mix it up a little bit. And Too Cool were definitely an underutilized team, I think, in general during that period. They were kind of like the fourth team, and they didn't really get a look in very often, which is a shame, because as I said, they were pretty damn talented. And I just thought this was all right, actually. I thought it was good. I do think, though, it would have been better had it just been Christian and Edge versus Too Cool for the tag team titles. That would have been, you know, a match that I hadn't seen too much of, so it would have been felt relatively cool. Fresh. And also would have served a decent purpose if you're looking to move the titles from Too Cool to Christian and Edge. I don't know. I don't think Too Cool held the belts for very long anyway. And there's a few moments in this show with titles in particular, we'll talk about when we get to the main event as well, where I feel like they're moving the belt around unnecessarily. I don't really know why Too Cool held the belts at all. I mean, obviously, Edge and Christian came out of WrestleMania with the belts. This is only 3 months later. And why we've had a Too Cool title reign in there as well. Not really sure why, especially if you're going to end the title reign in a Four Corners elimination match. It just feels unnecessarily moving around the belts. But I thought this was the best match of the night.
It's probably because they were over. And that, I know it's a bit of a shit reason to give someone a title, but was Vince Russo at this time?
No, Russo was doing WCW this time.
Okay.
There's some conjecture about who was writing at the time. So I always used to be under the impression that it was a guy called, forgot his bloody name again. I always forget his name.
Chris Kresge,
that's the one. Thank you very much. He was always credited for a very long time with this period. And certainly, as I said, the way he wielded some of the stories were just excellent. But in like recent years, there's been like lots of suggestion from people who were in the company at the time that he wasn't that important. But I think whoever was in charge of creative up until SummerSlam was doing a good job, because that's when Stephanie became head of creative, just after SummerSlam, and things did definitely go off the rails after that point. So anyway, it wasn't Vince Russo anymore.
One note before we move on: lots of very inconsistent officiating in this match, which I found very frustrating. Yeah, well, just irked me, to be honest, and ruined it.
So then we have Michael Cole backstage with Crash Holly. Holly says he's always been an overachiever and Angle is in big trouble. Just before that, sorry, I missed that we had a video package that was weirdly epic, hyping fully loaded. But it was a weird, like, very strange sort of orchestral type music that they were using for it, as if it was going to be like some kind of major dramatic happening. This all was before the first semifinal of the King of the Ring, Rikishi versus Val Venus, a match that went for 3 minutes and 15 seconds. and was won by Rikishi when he hit a belly-to-belly suplex. After the match, Trish got in the ring and attacked Rikishi by jumping on his back. Rikishi dumps her off and then goes for a bonsai drop until Venus hits a low blow. Venus then gets the steel steps and rams them into Rikishi's injured shoulder from earlier, and then also hits them with a chair and across some steps. Oh, man.
Rikishi, 20 minutes before whatever, half hour before, is absolutely fine. In his little interview, he's bloody limping and selling and everything now. I'm like, fucking hell, mate. Like, have a bit of bloody consistency. I know, like, when you stiffen up, like, you might start, the adrenaline wears off. But yeah, bloody heck. I did think, I was like, look at this feud, though. This is a feud for the ages, isn't it? Rikishi and Val Venus, probably the greatest cage match of all time between these two. Like, absolutely unbelievable.
That's when Rikishi does that ridiculous bump, isn't it?
Yeah, because the real winner is Val in that, because he takes it like an absolute stallion. This wasn't very good, was it? Let's be honest. It was serviceable, just about. Very much a waste of Val's talents, I think. I also hated that Rikishi's hurt, right? So what's he going to do after the match? He's going to threaten to bonsai drop on a lady. And I'm like, one, why? Why are you doing that? It's not a very face move thing to do. Also, he's injured. So get out of there. Get the F out of Dodge, because you've got a final now. And you need to, like,
crash all he did.
Yeah, like, just like walk away and just be like, oh, I got through that. Brilliant. And I just thought, to go back to what you've said earlier, and also you say quite often, it just completely took me out of the fact that this guy wants to win the tournament. It was just like, oh, I want to get a one up on this lady who just tried to get involved in the match by crushing her to death. And I was a bit like, that seems a bit much, mate. Like, I mean, it's all right. But yeah, I was happy that Val got a low blow on him and then smashed his arm up. He deserved it.
So I've said before that I write my notes out, and then because my handwriting's atrocious, I type them up after. And when I was typing my notes up for this, I realised that I hadn't really typed a lot of notes. So I watched it again today, and I added no notes. And it completely wasted my time today. I did it this one and the next one, because I just didn't really have any notes for it. But my notes are, Tim White dead, belly to belly for the win. That's it. And then I wrote, aftermath story doesn't work, but I can't remember what the aftermath was. But then, obviously, I've seen it there. And it, yeah, I think I wrote that because exactly the same. He's a face and he's beating up women. But yeah, just a nothing match, really. And the crowd weren't into it at all. But I think that's because they just knew it don't matter who won this one, because Kurt Angle was winning. So, you know, yeah, not whatever. Just a nothing match. I'll tell you what else I did do as well that I've not mentioned. As a little pop to myself. Every time I've written Ricky, Rikishi's name, I've written Rikishi, because that's how JR was calling him all the way through the night.
Oh, Rikishi.
Just a little pop to myself. So yeah, that's what I got out of that match.
Lovely. We then get an advert for the new look, WWF.com. Gonna have to get onto that. Ooh, soon.
Yeah. There is, I don't know, I'll be honest, I don't know what this is. Very odd WWF.com advert with inadvertent muff diving. I don't know what that is. I can't remember the advert, and I'm not a professional, so I didn't even read my notes before we started this. Yeah,
there is some inadvertent muff diving, as you put it, at some point in the show, and I can't remember where it is now.
It's the Dudley's match.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
I've got a note about that. Fucking hell.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't blow your load yet, even if you are rewatching that particular match. Kurt Angle versus Crash Holly's up next, the second semi-final, and this one goes for another whopping 4 minutes, and Angle hits the Angle Slam for the win in a regulation victory, really a squash match ultimately, really, you know, in truth, the definition of a TV match. Yeah, any thoughts on this, either of you?
I got that the crowd were distracted by something. I don't know if you noticed that. Whether there was someone getting kicked out or something. It was just everyone started standing up and looking over towards like the entranceway for something. So that might be why there was quite quiet for the match. But nothing really. Great start to the match. Angle Slam for the win. They're my notes for that one.
Yeah, I thought this was really fast paced. I thought it showed a good little bit of Crash, and then it finished far out of the blue. And I did actually think that if they'd have given them another 3 or 4 minutes, it would have been half decent. But it did exactly what it needed to do. It preserved the heel to beat the big old bastard who was really, really injured. Stupid booking.
Then there's some footage shown of the show at Madison Square Garden with Trump in the crowd. Lawler then does an interview with him, and Trump says his favorite superstar is The Rock, which is not a difficult thing to say at the time with Austin out injured as well.
Couldn't see Chris Jericho donating any money to Donald Trump, so I was a bit confused about this. So it's all very confused. And I couldn't see Kane anywhere agreeing with his stance on women's rights. It's very strange. Very strange thing.
Well, Kane was up next, in fairness, with an interview with Michael Cole. And Kane says it's always been about him becoming the WWF champion. And I'm just not sure that's true. But
his whole thing was trying to kill his brother for ages, not the title. He's like, come on, mate.
Yeah, that was my recollection too. Then Jonathan Coachman's with The Undertaker. Taker says the WWE title is the most coveted title in our sport, and he didn't come to Boston to lose.
So they both want the title. It's good to know. Because I was concerned that going into this title match, they might both be a bit blasé about it. So I'm really glad that we had this little moment.
Confirmation.
Yeah.
Then we get the hype video for the next match. It is the hardcore evening gown match. Briscoe winning the hardcore title. Then him and Patterson celebrating with champagne, and Patterson attacking Briscoe to win the belt under the 24/7 rule. Briscoe then searching to find Patterson, who is hiding in the women's locker room in drag. Briscoe then dressing up in drag himself to go after Patterson, and a brawl ensuing in the women's dressing room. Finally, they fall out of the dressing room, and then Vince happens upon them and books them in this hardcore evening gown match. Briscoe enters to Hulk Hogan's music with a Jim Duggan 2x4. Patterson comes out with, I don't know what the song was. I can't even describe the song. He comes out with a shopping trolley full of toilet paper, apparently, and other sanitary products, it should be noted, and also gives the Fink a kiss on the way to the ring. Pat Patterson gets on the mic and then asks Jerry Briscoe to calm down. He says that he's always been by Briscoe's side and was always his friend. Patterson says that he will lay down for Briscoe and let Briscoe win the title. They hug, and then Patterson hits a low blow, turning on Briscoe, and the match gets underway. Their hardcore title evening gown match lasts just a mercifully short 3 minutes, and is thankfully interrupted by Crash Holly, who runs in with a trash can, strips both of the men down to their bra and panties, and then hits Patterson with the trash can and gets the pin.
I'll go first, because I think Rockstar's gagging, so I'm just going to hold him back a minute. Pat Patterson uses a banana as a weapon in this. Horribly green. Oh, it's very underwrite, which I didn't enjoy at all.
Well, that's for extra. That's for extra viciousness, because it would have been harder, yeah. See. So.
Oh, terrible. JR saying this is hideous while clearly stifling laughter was wonderful, because this is shit. This is absolute shite. I wasn't a fan of all the sanitary products in the trolley. I thought that was a bit classless in what is otherwise a really classy presentation, I thought. I really like this, because it's a bit of fun, and what it also does is it breaks up a fucking relentlessly paced show. Because to this point, I said this after the tag match, I'm fucking knackered. I'm absolutely knackered. There is no downtime at all. There's match, promo segment, match, interview backstage, blah, 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 blah. All that good shit. And I was like, this just kind of slowed it down a little bit, and it's my match of the night because of that. Like, genuinely, because there was nothing else that really got me through the whole show. And this...
Alex is looking baffled. I love
it. Yeah, just gave me some respite. There you go, Rockstar.
Are you joking?
No, absolutely not.
He's lost all respect for you.
That's absolutely fine. I ain't worried about that.
That'll never happen. But are you serious?
Yeah, because I, when we were talking on Saturday, right, and I've said this, kind of said this a little bit to Tommy, this, up until this match, I found this show fucking exhausting to watch. I found it really hard going. And I think, like, it was that conditioning of the pace of shows now and how much downtime there is. There's just no downtime. And up to after this match, I'd watched it all in one go, because I think it's like an hour and 41 minutes or something to the end of this match. And I'd done it all, and I was just absolutely spent. And this match just gave me some downtime, and I think it stops this show from being borderline unwatchable, because it's just so fast-paced. I just had, it's exhausted me. I was tired. And it's just a bit of fun, isn't it? It's a bit of fun.
Well,
it's two middle-aged men dressed as women. Come on.
Let him off the leash. What do you want? Let him off the leash, Alex. What do you want to say about this?
I've got nothing to say. I can't believe that at all. I think you're having me up there, honestly.
Let me say this, that I don't agree with old man his assessment of this match. So don't worry, Alex. I'm not also going to join this strange thing that's going on. But I do agree with him about what he said about the rest of the show. Like the first, I watched this in two sittings, and the first sitting I got 45 minutes in and was like, this is really tough going. And I don't know what it was about it. I don't know if it's that we've just spent 18 months watching WrestleMania and the low-key nature of this show was kind of like, what's going on? I don't know if it was just that this was a particularly poorly booked King of the Ring, which I think it was, to be honest. Or the fact that by the third, after three matches, as you said earlier on, we had Rikishi, Crash Holly and Val Venus going through. I was already feeling it. I was feeling that kind of lethargy watching it. It was a very strange thing. Going in, I was like, two hours and 40 minutes, this is going to be a breeze. And within 45 minutes, I was like, I am exhausted.
Well, I mean, well, I agree with that. And I think the main reason for me is, like, as you said, like after three matches, Val Venus, Rikishi and Crash Holly have gone through in the tournament. I don't know how you're supposed to keep invested in this tournament with them three going through. But when you were explaining the rundown of this match, even you talking about it, I felt embarrassed. And I was watching it and live with Joanna and her three children, and Heidi, my daughter, comes around, and you know, she, Heidi's 9 and James is 8, Emily's 11, Bethany's 13 and Joanna's 36. But I was watching it and I was praying that no one come in. I was like, please nobody, even James who's 8. I was thinking, if he walks in and sees this, he's going to think, what on earth are you watching? And he's 8. It was just embarrassing. And I remember, obviously, the Attitude Era, I love the Attitude Era, and I used to hate shit like this back then. It used to make me cringe. And I've said before about, I see wrestling as my guilty pleasure. And prior to doing this show, I didn't really tell a lot of people that I like wrestling. I would never fucking tell them to watch this, ever. Because it's just awful. It's absolutely awful. It's crap. And thank God Crash Holly comes in and saves the day. And this is for an audience of one. Well, it's not there. It's an audience of two, buddy. Sam. and the other one's Vince McMahon. And you can imagine him just being pissing himself laughing at this. And it's not funny. It's just not funny. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. It's the worst thing on the show by a country mile. I'm absolutely flabbergasted with that. Flabbergasted. I mean, fair play to you. Fair play to you. Who am I to say what your match of the night is? But flipping hell.
Like I said, like before, because it's not a match, it can't be. It was the Gerald Briscoe thing.
And I'd agree with that. I completely agree with that.
But I do take your point about Crash Holly coming in. I do think without that, it is not a much fun, because then the joke is on Patterson and Briscoe, I think, and obviously the joke's on them anyway, but if there's a winner, then it becomes a bit silly. But I just, it's not the quality of what's in it. Yeah. It's the fact that this show needs it more than it needs anything else on it, because I don't think there's a good match on the card. And don't get me wrong, I ain't going to be like, guys, you've got to see this Evening Gown match. I mean, fucking hell. I mean, 6 stars in the Tokyo Dome, 100%. It's definitely on Steven's recommended watch list. Definitely, without doubt. But yeah, it's just, I needed it. And when I knew it was coming up, I was dreading it. I was like, Jesus Christ, this is going to be bloody awful. But by the time it came, I was just like, Christ, I need something just to cut through. I know there's like the allusion to Vince McMahon being Joe Cool and stuff like that. It's fucking dry, this show, as well. It's really dry. There's not really any lightheartedness in it to this point. And that is something, and like, well, watch more stuff around this period, I imagine. That is something I find now, that I watch it back and I'm like, Jesus Christ, there's a lot of serious, serious stuff on here. And I think the stuff that, as we've alluded to, like the stuff that would have popped us, like Jericho sexually assaulting Stephanie McMahon, like back in the year 2000, when that was oddly acceptable, apparently, that fun, in inverted commas, that we may have had when we were younger watching that, and millions of others would have, is gone completely. So there's this discomfort when I'm watching stuff like that. Like I said, I hated the stuff with Trish, where Rikishi's basically going to squash her. And it's like, oh, I'm not really in for this, to be honest, mate. And the evening gown match allowed me to just go away from that. And that's why I'm like, you know what, I need this. 6 stars, 6.5 stars.
The reason I didn't like it, I didn't find it especially embarrassing, other than the fact that it was so bad, like that the execution was so bad.
Mm.
Like the concept itself could be embarrassing to some people, two middle-aged men in dressing, you know, dressed up as women in evening gowns with bra and panties. Yes, the concept could be embarrassing, probably is embarrassing to people. For me, it was just more of the execution. It felt like if a couple of 15-year-olds had been given a video camera and had never had a video camera before, like before phones were around, and then they tried to make something, but they were so excited by the prospect and also kind of nervous about the prospect of being on video that they kind of just couldn't, what they produced was utter shit. And then when they watched it back, they just laughed at themselves because they were so embarrassed at what they'd produced. That's what it made me think. And because they just couldn't do anything either. Like, it wasn't just that it was a silly concept and a little bit embarrassing. It was also, as I said, they couldn't do anything. They were just rubbish at doing what they were supposed to be trying to do. So I was happy when Crash came out and saved us all from all of it. Again, though, wouldn't call it boring, which is what we got during this boring chant from the crowds. I mean, all it would have taken was a We Love Tables chant, and I'd have just written them all off for life. So after this, we get backstage. D-Von gives Bubba a pep talk as Bubba writes Tori's name on a table. Then there's the hype video, which shows Tori being saved from a powerbomb through a table by Briscoe and DX, helping Tori to splash Bubba through a table. DX and Edge and Christian then throw Bubba and D-Von off a stage in a dumpster, and Vince then booking a handicap dumpster table match in the interest of fairness. That is next, the handicap dumpsters tables match. No idea. Or at least I didn't before we started. Although I felt the commentators did a pretty good job of explaining the rules. Effectively, the idea being that the DX team had to put Dudleys in the dumpster and close the lid, whilst the Dudleys had to put each of the DX team, which was Road Dogg, X-Pac and Tori, through a table. They also made a point of saying this was no disqualification, but then they all set up as if it was a normal tag match where they just tagged in and out. Which I knew that both of you would love, being sticklers for consistent refereeing. And before the match, Road Dogg does his pre-match bit, suck it, and there were some loud X-Pac sucks chants, which he was unfortunately following X-Pac everywhere he went at this point in time. So ultimately what happens is that Tori tries to escape the clutches of the Dudley boys by jumping into the dumpster away from them. Now, this allowed the New Age Outlaws to grab a chair each and hit the Dudley boys with those chairs and then dump them in the dumpster to get the victory. But they weren't aware that Tori had also climbed into the dumpster beforehand. So as DX walked away celebrating their victory, the Dudley boys then brought Tori out of the dumpster and finally powerbombed her through a table from the second rope, to the delight of the crowd once more. Alex?
I've got really mixed feelings about this match. Really mixed feelings about it. Some good parts. X-Pac, obviously. I love X-Pac. This, you know, I mentioned it before in regards to his X-Pac sucks chance. Really unfair. I think he's fantastic. The start of it, why are the heels doing a promo at the beginning? And quite a face-heavy promo. Never got that. The guy dressed as a Dudley in the crowd is absolutely incredible. He kept the same expression throughout. Fantastic. And then I got that about this. It's an extremely personal feud whereby the Dudleys can't wait to get their hands on DX, and then the bell starts and it's just a normal tag match. It's just stupid. Absolutely stupid. But then there's a lot of bad in this. A lot of bad. And it's the muff diving spot that we spoke about earlier with D-Von jumping from the top rope. Made me feel really uncomfortable. And Bubba Ray Dudley wiggling his tongue at Tori is an image that I never needed to see. And the crowd are just going mad for violence against women. And again, when I was 18, I probably popped for it as well. I can't say that I didn't, otherwise I'd be a hypocrite. So I probably popped for it, but it hasn't aged well at all. I did actually think that the table spots were pretty good, looked pretty brutal. And I did enjoy the spot where the Dudleys got in the dumpster and then they climbed out of the side and they, you know, called over, lifted the lid up, and then they weren't in there. And the 3D is an absolutely awesome move. Always loved the 3D. So a bit of the good, the bad and the ugly with this one. Really mixed feelings. I can't make my mind up whether I enjoyed it, because there were some parts I enjoyed it, and I hated it because some parts I hated. So yeah, mixed feelings about this one.
Ooh, a mixed bag, a mixed dumpster, if you will. Devon selling Tori's kicks was wonderful. I thought he really really sold them like an absolute champ. X-Buck puts up a table for some reason and then probably gets suplexed through it, and I'm like, fucking hell, mate. Like, fucking Jesus. Like, just fucking, that's the rule, is that you and your teammates go through a table, each of you, you lose. What the fucking doing? What are you doing? Knob. Absolute knob. Oh, mate, it's just fucking, it's just a madness. And the visual, to echo what you said, the visual of two women chasing after, two men chasing after Tori was fucking horrible. One thing I will say, and it doesn't excuse all of the stuff beforehand, is that Bubba Ray clearly protects Tori incredibly well in the powerbomb, the seated powerbomb through the table. It doesn't excuse the horrible stuff that goes before, but I did want to shine a light on that, because obviously when he does it to Mae Young, he don't protect her so much, because she basically said that she'd fucking kill him if he if he tried to protect her, which I absolutely loved. But I thought this was absolute shite, to be honest. This is a part of, like, I hated Heel DX. X-Pac and Road Dogg didn't ever get on with it at all. Kind of to your point, Boxstar, Road Dogg's still playing to the crowd. Like, even though he's not in the contents of what he's saying, by ending on "We got two words for you," you're just getting the crowd involved. I know Tom will be there. He's like, "Oh, you don't bloody moan about Adam Cole, though, does he? Bloody heck. Oh, bloody heck." But yeah, I never really got on with
that. Is he from up north as well now?
He is, yeah. Dad, what are you doing, lad? You can't cheer Adam Cole.
Oh, Ashley, come on.
Ashley, lad. Fred Elliott. In fact, actually, God rest his soul, because he died about a month ago, didn't he?
There's another one.
Yeah. Another one. I can hit DJ Khaled over there. Is anyone dead in this match?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
Oh, I got that. One. But the plus side is that this is the second match work which involves non-dead personnel.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Yeah, that's it. That's it, really. I didn't think much of the match. I loathe the fact that it started off as a wrestling match when it's obviously a deeply personal feud. But then that's the booking, isn't it? If it's a handicap match, there's no way of avoiding Tori getting involved if it's just chaos. So like, I kind of get it, but fucking just don't do it. Just don't include her in the match, to be honest. But yeah, crap.
I think maybe that they should be a bit more, what's the word? I think they should just be a bit more single-minded with some of the rules around matches. Like, so for example, they so often just say, okay, so there's no disqualifications, no submissions, no countouts, or maybe even no submissions in certain situations. But you're like, well, for example, in a submission match, they say there's no disqualification because there's got to be a submission to end the match. But you're like, well, so that means you could just bring a gun and kill someone. So that's just silly. So it shouldn't be no disqualification. It should be only submissions can win the match unless you break the rules. Do you know what I mean? Like, that, this disqualification should still be a thing in that situation. And the same goes for like triple threat matches. I don't understand why they're no disqualification. Because is it the idea that, oh, if you disqualify someone, then who wins? Well, just continue the match without the person who got disqualified. Like, it's not hard. It's not an issue. So I just think, and in this situation, it's like, it's not no disqualification, but you can use tables because it's a tables match. So I mean, like, that's the bit where I'm like, just do that. Then you can allow for the tags that, like, they have to tag in and out, but you've still got the ability to use the table. I just felt like it just needs to be a tiny bit more, just a little bit more detail, and they'd be fine.
Well, but then you'd have had, it's a tables and dumpsters match where if you use the dumpster or the tables, you're not disqualified. But if you use a chair or something, then you are a disqualified match. And that's a big T-shirt, mate.
Well, I don't think they're making a T-shirt out of the handicap dumpster and tables match anyway. So I think we're good.
I always got that when they did the TLC pay-per-view and they had a chairs match. It was like, chairs illegal. Well, so if I put someone through a table, does that mean that I'm disqualified? Or and then this, and don't get me started on the stairs match that they did in one.
Tables, ladders, chairs, and stairs.
Yeah. Oh god. But yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, chairs illegal. So is everything else not legal then?
But that's what they should do. Chairs, right? They should just go like, you can use chairs and that's it. They are designated as part of this match, but everything else is not. And we will give you the chairs. We will supply the chairs. Because that's the other thing that's crazy in most new DQ matches, they go into the ring and find bowling balls and all kinds of stuff, and you're like, what the fuck is that doing there? That's just stupid.
I mean, to be fair, that's pretty much real life.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, in terms of my thoughts on the match, it was all right. It passed some time. I won't go mad for it. I was a little bit like, when I've gone back to my default of not looking up the card beforehand, now that we're doing these shows, and I couldn't remember the full card. I could remember bits and pieces, but I was like, oh, what are the Dudley Boys doing when I saw the four-way tag team match? Why aren't they involved in this as well? And now obviously I found out that they're involved in this, which you're right. There are a lot of visuals that are uncomfortable. There are a lot of bits and pieces where ultimately at the time they didn't mind having mixed gender matches, and they didn't mind women and men being in the ring at the same time, which obviously they changed when the PG era returned. But I guess again, it just feels like the main attraction of the match. In fact, the main attraction of the match is definitely that Bubba Ray Dudley wants to get his hands on Tori and put her through the table. And they have not only positioned that as the main attraction, but they've also positioned it as if Bubba Ray Dudley gets some kind of strange cheap thrill out of it as well. So it's kind of a double-edged thing, and it just feels weirdly dated. And I think this is the thing, to old man's point, is there are moments of levity here, moments of fun, if you can still consider those things fun, like as you probably did at the time. So like, you know, the Stephanie and Jericho thing early in the show, the stuff with Trish, the stuff here with Tori. But looking at it through 2024 eyes, it's just not fun now, whereas at the time perhaps it was much easier to accept it as fun.
Yeah, and I will say, with regards to the evening game match, I wasn't uncomfortable watching it. I just thought it was shit. I just thought it was embarrassing. Whereas this and the end of the Jericho match and this match and the Trish stuff made me feel uncomfortable, especially the Devon Dudley bit and the Bubba Ray Dudley wiggling his tongue made me feel really uncomfortable. And I think part of the reason was probably I was a bit ashamed, because I probably would have popped for this. I mean, do you know what? There's no probably about it. I did. At the time, seeing Tori go for a table, it was what I wanted to see. And you know, maybe I am a bit of ashamed to say that, but and you know, it's no excuse that it was a different time.
You know, the thing is though, is I don't. Let's explore the Tori going for the table bit a little bit, because I don't think it's that. Obviously, you don't want to see such joy garnered from violence against women. But the true crime, in my view, anyway, was that they had positioned Tori in the way they'd positioned her in the first place. Like, and this is how they positioned all women, was in the context of their looks and in the context of the relationships they had with men. So the reason why no one liked Tori is because she had turned on Kane, who had previously been her boyfriend, and went with X-Pac instead. That's why people hate. That was the basic reason why people disliked Tori. So and they did that with all women. Like, pretty much all women were pretty much positioned as either someone who was going to do that, or was going to some other way try to use men or use other people to do their bidding for them. That's basically how they all women kind of went through that cycle at some point. And so you're building an overall canon or story or narrative within your promotion, which is that all women are evil, they're all out to get you, let's give them a good old powerbomb for a table, basically. Yeah. And that's the issue. It's not necessarily the individual Tory being put through a table and that being a problem. It's just that's how the whole promotion is geared towards, at the end point, being some violence towards some woman at some point, even in the main event at this point with Stephanie.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's where it kind of, it's a real problem, is that there's no, it's not that it just so happens that one woman on the roster is horrific and we don't like her, and therefore things happening to her that are bad is fun, in the same way as it would be for the men. It's amplified precisely because she's a woman that's the problem.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And as I've said with regards to that table bit, it wasn't so much the table bit, it was that Bubba Ray Dudley was having an orgasm about it. That was, you know, and not the table bit, yeah, it was, you know, doesn't date well. But the fact that he was having like getting off on it, it's just makes me feel uncomfortable. Yeah, it's a good point. I've never thought about that with regards to women. It's a really good point.
So after this, we get Michael Cole interview Kurt Angle backstage. Angle says that the King of Ring is the most important tournament in the world, so he has to win it. He says Rikishi is great. He's really great if you like dancing and rubbing butts in people's faces. Angle says he'll win the tournament and then beat Triple H for the title at SummerSlam.
One thing that I loved about this, when he said rubbing butts and then said, pardon my French. That's fantastic. Oh, it's brilliant. Really popped me, that did. Really popped me. He's just unbelievable. He's just fantastic, Kurt Angle. And everyone, and people say about that he picked it up so quickly in ring, and he did. But it's things like this that he picked up really quickly as well. Everything, the whole package, like talking and just little lines, like every single promo, I had little snappy lines that were just really funny like that. He's just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely figured out what it was that he needed to do very, very quickly in pretty much all aspects. The only thing I would say that might have stood him in good stead in the future would have been potentially to not do quite so much of the silly stuff, the silly geeky nerdy stuff, because in my view, he didn't truly become a top level guy until, well, I guess you could argue he was sort of the following year, SummerSlam, when he was facing, just after that, when he faced Austin and stuff. But I don't think he really truly made it into sort of 2003 when he was up against Lesnar, and he was a more serious presentation by that point. Here, he was always just bubbling under the top level because he had that kind of unserious gimmick that he, and it was great. It was really fun and I loved him at the time, but looking back, it does feel like it did hamper him just a bit.
And he always had that silly side, but he could, especially in his later years with, like you say, with Shawn Michaels and Lesnar, you just knew he could switch. He could switch to it like a machine, you know. But he always had that silly side. Like we talked about the sexy Kurt promo, how funny it was. But then you knew that he could just snap like that and kill you. Whereas in this time, he never had that edge. He just had that he was a fantastic wrestler. But I see what you're saying with regards to his silliness. He was just up there all the time.
So after that, the coach talks to Rikishi and he says nothing will stop him from backing that ass up. This was Rikishi's pitch ahead of the final of the King of the Ring.
It's not the best pitch, is it?
No, I get to your point, definitely.
Yeah.
Then you mentioned this earlier, Auto Man. There's a sort of hype video then that talks about the importance of King of the Ring. I found this a little bit weird. Like it felt like it was a fragment of a video, as if there's something been cut off of it and it was in there just to fill time or cover something else that they didn't want to be put into the thing anymore. I don't know. It just didn't feel right. So not about it.
It was bollocks. That's what it was. Winner of the King of the Ring becomes an instant big player. Tell that to Billy Gunn, who won it the year before. In absolute nonsense.
What, fucking Billy Gunn singing a right kick in tonight.
Oh, I don't mind Billy Gunn, but he ain't a big player, is he?
It had a bit of a hit and miss, didn't it? I mean, Mabel, Ken Shamrock, Billy Gunn. I mean, you could even argue Owen Hart didn't really make it to the very top. So the next match is the final, King of the King of the Ring. It's Kurt Angle versus Rikishi, and it is a match that goes for nearly 6 minutes. It's positively epic compared to everything else in the show. Yeah, and Rikishi gets belly-to-belly suplex off the top for a 3 count to win the tournament for Angle. So Angle's the King of the Ring. Yeah, old man, what did you think of this?
It's all right, wasn't it? I thought... It was symptomatic of what we talked about right at the start. It's almost a sprint. It's almost like an afterthought. It's just, right, we need to like make sure that Kurt Angle is King of the Ring. I liked when Angle clotheslined Rikishi very early in the match, and he clotheslines him hard, and Rikishi goes down. Now, obviously, Rikishi's a big lad, as we talked about, for those who don't know. And Angle sells it through, like he's clotheslining through him, and he lands on his knees. And I thought that was a really nice little touch. The commentators are putting over something, but I can't read what I've said. But I thought it was excellent, which is good to know. Yeah, putting over previous winners. They're putting over the previous winners of the King of the Ring in the final. And I did think that was a really, really nice touch. I also liked the false finish off of the butt splash. I thought that was really good. I did not think the crowd... I cried a bit shit anyway, to be honest, like full stop on this night, but they did not acknowledge that. Classic Boston, isn't it? Sick of it. And then there's the belly-to-belly suplex for the win. It made sense, the length of the match, because they are kind of playing up the injury angle, and I think the move to finish the match is big enough. So it's just, it just tips it over into acceptable territory for me in terms of what they're trying to achieve. But it all felt like a mess and a waste. So not a mess, a waste, because of, a, I think, what they probably could have done on this night. But for this match, it achieved what they wanted to. Kurt Angle ran off like Crash Holly, and that was good.
Nothing much to add other than that. For a big guy, Rikishi is pretty good. He's pretty quick and nimble, but he ain't no Kurt Angle. I got that with the two counts from the sit-down slam, and it got me. Actually got me. I thought, you know, it really got me. I thought he was going to win. The suplex from the top rope was really good, and unsurprisingly, Angle wins. Like we said, after that Jericho match, he was always going to win. The same as all the others, really.
And that's the thing. I thought all the matches are really similar on this whole show. Like, they all followed a very similar pattern. I think the action must have spilled to the outside at least 7 or 8 times in 7 or 8 different matches. And the steel steps got hit at least 4 or 5 times in different matches. I don't know if this was just what everybody did at the time, or this was just a bad night when nobody was talking to each other to say, oh, by the way, we're doing the ring step bit tonight, so don't you do it as well. It just was a little bit repetitive, like most of the action. And in and of itself, it was fine. It did get a couple of one near fall and a couple of good moments, but it wasn't enough. And to my point at the beginning of the show, it was not enough to put Kurt Angle over as a serious threat to The Rock, The Undertaker, Kane, or Triple H, who could potentially come out of this as the world champion. And even though he would not long after that actually win the world title, just because you then put the belt on him doesn't mean that anyone feels like he deserves it or should win it. And I just don't think, this certainly didn't do what they needed to do in order for him to be the champion. So then we get some backstage stuff again with the McMahons and Triple H. They argue about Vince's lack of staying cool and being backed into a corner. Vince reiterates that their opponents cannot get along. Kane and Taker are then shown getting ready to enter the arena, and The Rock walking through the corridors backstage. The Rock is then shown in USA Weekly with Mike Piazza in a wrestling versus baseball piece. And then The Undertaker comes out to a dubbed entrance with Dead Man walking over the top of what I imagine was American Badass by Kid Rock at the time.
So I just wanted to touch on, so what we have is we have a little run through of the faces in the match. Kane is walking, Undertaker's sitting, and The Rock is walking. And I just sat there. I think I'd had enough at this point, to be honest. I was like, what are they trying to achieve with this shite? The Undertaker's literally sat there, just like looking at the handlebars of his bloody motorbike. And I'm like, Christ, what's he doing? What's he waiting for? Where is he as well? Surely he should be up by Gorilla. You see the lads are in forward motion. Bloody heck. Bloody Mark Calloway.
So the main event is a 6-man tag team match, which is also for Triple H's WWF World Heavyweight title. Make that make sense, somebody. The stipulation of the match is that if Kane, The Rock, or The Undertaker should pin either Shane McMahon, Triple H, or Vince McMahon, they will become the WWF World Heavyweight Champion somehow. The match goes for nearly 18 minutes and ends when Vince goes for a people's elbow, but is countered by The Rock with a rock bottom, and he gets the pin on Vince to win the match and take the title from Triple H. Let's start with you, Alex.
It's a 6-man tag match for the WWE Championship. Just listen to that and let that sink in. A 6-man tag match for the WWE Championship. And not only that, Triple H is probably the biggest heel in the company. Some people could say Vince McMahon, but in terms of wrestling, Triple H is the biggest heel in the company. And the year 2000 was when his obsession for that title peaked. Okay. So why do I feel sorry for him? Why do I feel sorry for the biggest heel in the company? I will just backtrack a little bit. The backstage bit, I thought Triple H was brilliant because it was really showing how worried he was that he was going to lose his title. It was completely out of his hands. And just, I did love the obsession that he had with that title. I thought it really added to his character. I will say, how on earth can Matt like the American Badass gimmick? It's absolutely terrible. With the exception of the re-debut, which is really, really good. It's just terrible. Absolutely terrible. The Rock, the most over on the show. There's no doubt about that. No Rock promo in this show, which was a bit weird. And I love the bit when it's showing Kurt Angle in the background, watching backstage, drinking milk, absolutely quality. But the, like I said, the psychologists are all wrong with this. The heels, or Triple H in particular, is just a massive, massive disadvantage. It's just an absolute nonsense. The match itself is just madness. So frantic, really hard to keep up with what's going on. The Undertaker, the dead man, the Phenom, one of the greatest superstars of all time, and he comes out with the line, "Hello, Mr. Turnbuckle Pad," when he's shoving someone's head into it. I mean, again, I repeat, how can Matt like this gimmick? But the Shane from the top rope to the table was pretty decent. I just wonder how much of Triple H being annoyed is kayfabe or real life. It's just a mess, an absolute mess. Not befitting of a main event of a pay-per-view. For me, everyone looks embarrassed. Even Kane looks a bit red in the face. but with the exception of Vince, who's loving life in the main event, and now I will say I didn't actually feel uncomfortable watching Vince in this, so that's a slight bonus, but this isn't good at all. Not good at all for me.
No, completely agree. We're off to a bad start because I think it's Shane starts for the heel team. And both the King and JR are like, surely if you're Triple H, you're starting. And like, to your point, Rockstar, like, if I'm Triple H, I'm that worried. You've got these two bloody soft shits behind you who aren't wrestlers, aren't wrestling week in, week out. Why on earth are you letting them anywhere near the ring? Like, you just wouldn't, would you? You'd be like, right, I'm fighting for this title because it means so much to me. Start off that, the stipulation is absolute bollocks, because you know how it's going to play out. You know how it's going to play out, in that either there's two ways that this goes. Either Vince McMahon is getting pinned for Triple H to lose the title, or Kane is getting pinned by Triple H and Triple H retains the title. Those are the only two possible outcomes in this, because you ain't pinning The Rock, you ain't pinning The Undertaker, you're not pinning Triple H. And you're probably not pinning Shane because he was actually wrestling, not regularly, but sporadically at this point. There are so many missed spots in this, specifically relating to pinfall attempts. And The Undertaker is guilty of this three times, I think it is, where he's clearly meant to break up a pin attempt that's being done by The Rock or Kane to someone, or someone on The Rock or Kane, and he just doesn't. He just stands there, just looking like a fucking gorm. Like, he's just stood there, just like, oh, I don't really know what's going on. So it's The Rock has to kick out of the pedigree. And you can tell, well, I think from the commentators' reactions, it's not really meant to happen.
No.
Because they don't really sell it. And I'm like, fuck hell, like, really? Are you really, like, allowing that to happen? And then The Rock just gets beaten down for bloody ages. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, he's getting beaten down by Shane, Triple H, and a little bit Vince. And I'm just like, really? Like, I know you. Someone has to, in the normal layout of a face versus heel tag match, whether it be two people on each side, three people, however many, someone's got to take that beat down. But I was like, fucking hell, come on, guys. Like, it's against two. One part-timer, one horrible old gear, and then Triple H, who, like, at this point is the joint top star in the company, so I get that. But I just didn't like it really at all. I didn't think it made any, going to all the points that you've made, Rockstar, it didn't make sense to me in how could you book it and it be anything less than an absolute fucking mess. But it was also a very predictable mess as well. One thing I will say is that Triple H, his face, when the fake says "and new," his selling on the new is extraordinary. It's absolutely brilliant. And for this whole match and basically getting through it with a semblance of credit, Triple H is my MVP for the night. But I did not think this was good at all.
So I wasn't quite as down on the match as you were. I quite enjoyed the match overall, but the booking was an absolute mess. And I think, again, this goes back to my thing about them changing the titles around all the time. So Triple H came out of WrestleMania's champion. He lost the belt to The Rock at Backlash. He then wins it back at Judgment Day. And then here he loses it back to The Rock. What's the point? What's the point in that? I understand the first couple of title switches back and forth. But this one's really weird because not only that, but by the time, you know, because you're going to switch the belt back at some point to a heel. So maybe, like, maybe just keep Triple H on the title on Triple H and then have, you know, the match with The Rock and Kurt Angle at SummerSlam, and that's where The Rock wins the title or something. But it just feels weird. There's one too many title, or too many title changes during this period anyway. And it feels to me like they got to this show and they just didn't, they wanted to just keep Triple H and The Rock against each other every single month, but they didn't have a new way of doing it in a singles confrontation. So they were like, well, let's just put them in this weird six-man tag thing. They could have had The Undertaker versus Triple H here for the world title. If they just, they could have just given Triple H another title defense and then had The Rock win the belt, as I say, at SummerSlam, and that would have been fine. But no, they come up with this weird thing with the six-man tag thing. And the classic reaction at the time was, well, Triple H just learned from the master, Shawn Michaels, how to never actually lose the titles that you win. So obviously he didn't get pinned here, he didn't lose the belt himself, and that was sort of Shawn Michaels' big thing prior to his return in 2002. So the booking was really strange, but I didn't mind the match. I mean, don't get me wrong, I wasn't big on it, and it wasn't my match of the night, so that shows you all you need to know, really. But it was fine. I did, what I enjoyed most was the very brief periods with The Rock and Triple H in the ring together, because they really showed at those moments how their chemistry was just absolutely lightning in a bottle. It was fantastic. They just had something incredible going. It was this is Triple H's best in-ring year of all time, probably The Rock's as well, to be honest. They were on fire against each other. Their Iron Man match is spectacular. They were just brilliant in the ring together, but they just didn't have enough time in the ring together. And I would have been, I'm sure at the time WWF audiences were probably getting a little bit fatigued of Triple H and The Rock, but I would have appreciated this if it was just Triple H versus The Rock at this moment, because I'm sure that would have been a heck of a lot better as a match. I think just for pure popularity, The Rock will be my MVP for the night. I couldn't think of one, to be honest. And, you know, it's tempting to give it to Angle, but I was just like, he didn't really perform that amazingly, did he, over the course of the night? I mean, he did perform in three matches, but none of them were amazing. So, yeah, I'm going with The Rock as my MVP. So that means it's time for us to give our overall thoughts, our score out of 10, and any other business we have not yet gotten to. Let's start with you, Rockstar.
Well, it's 2000 WWF, so it has to be good, doesn't it? Turns out, no, not really. 2000 brought us an excellent Royal Rumble, a star-studded Mania main event, an amazing Judgment Day with a fantastic Iron Man match, which I never thought I'd say, and one of, if not the best SummerSlams of all time, but this is one to forget. And the main crux for me is the booking. If the tournament was booked better, this would be a much better event. It makes no sense to push Crash Holly, Val Venus and Rikishi when you've got Jericho, Guerrero and dare I say Benoit. The right person won, there's no doubt about that, but it was just too predictable. I know that's not always a bad thing, but in this situation it is. The filler, the tag team championship match is decent. The DX Dudley boys match is good, the bad and the ugly, as I've said. And the evening ground match, one of the worst matches in wrestling history. But the main event, just look at pay-per-views that I mentioned earlier. So we've got the Royal Rumble, a street fight with Triple H and Cactus Jack, which was followed by the Hell in a Cell match at No Way Out. You've got Mania, which is Triple H, The Rock, Foley and The Big Show. Judgment Day, Triple H and The Rock with a re-debut of The Undertaker. Crap gimmick, but you can't deny that moment being top draw. SummerSlam, Triple H, The Rock and Angle in one of the best triple threat matches of all time. And we're given this. A completely nonsensical, pathetic excuse of a main event that pleasures one person, and that is Vince McMahon. And unfortunately, that cunt has had enough pleasure to last a lifetime. So I'm giving this a 3 out of 10, and I think I'm being quite generous. Match of the night is Jericho v. Angle. My MVP, I am tempted to give it to Triple H, but I'm going to give it to Jericho, and it's a token MVP. It's not going to happen again. He's had a lot of shit recently, and some of it is well-deserved. But my bias doesn't show when it comes to all wrestlers. Just retire and grow old with grace. But I was reminded here just how much I love this guy. And I had just a great feeling inside watching the match. You could argue that Kurt Angle deserves it. But as you said, they're not for this night. The year after is probably his best night one performance. And if only I watched that show by accident instead of this. So 3 out of 10, match of the night, Jericho Angle. And Jericho gets my MVP.
This is a weird one, this, because I've talked about, and it's why the evening gown match is my match of the night, is that it is frenetic. It is absolutely non-stop, and it's not particularly good. But in being so frenetic and maniacal almost, it's kind of, this is the kind of show where if I was just watching it and I wasn't watching it to consider discussing it afterwards, I would have, apart from the unsavory stuff, I would have probably had a nice enough time, turned off at the end and gone, you know what, that was all right, actually, that was all right. But when you're actually watching it and you're breaking it down and you're like, Jesus Christ, this is fucking dirt, isn't it? This is absolute dirt, really. Like, the booking's dirt, the wrestling's not particularly good, and it's saved for me by an evening gown match because it breaks up the sheer pulverizing pace that is set from the very start of the show. And I just didn't really find a whole lot to enjoy here, really, outside of Triple H selling new and a little bit of Angle Jericho as well at the start. But I didn't hate it. To me, it's nothing. It's just nothing to this show. And I can't hate it because I don't think it's trying to do anything at all. Like we talked about at the start and through the show, the booking of the tournament is just a nothing. It's signposted after the quarterfinals. Who's winning it? So we're like, all right, cool. So that's a procession. So we're just waiting for that to happen. And then everything else, the two tag team matches just happen. And then the main event just happens. And it all just exists. And I think that's all it's meant to do. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10 because just don't care. And I know that it's like, I just didn't care when I was watching it. But this is absolute shit. I fucking hate this. I was just apathetic when I was watching it. So I'll give it an apathetic 4.
I'm giving it an apathetic 4 too.
Excellent.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed the main event for what it was. And there were one or two bits of decent wrestling. Kurt Angle versus Chris Jericho was a good match. I enjoyed the tag team confrontation. That's probably about it, to be honest. The tables match was okay, but a lot of this stuff was fraught with the issues we spoke about in terms of violence towards women and just the glee in that as well. Again, I've talked about this a lot, but for me, the context adds so much about what's bad about those things. And in this case, the context is, yeah, let's put the women through the tables, let's beat the women up, let's, you know, it's, that is the context of the violence, and it's therefore a lot less savory, and certainly by any kind of modern standard is just not acceptable. The other thing I did want to mention about being dated, which was nothing to do with kind of controversial stuff or whatever, and I've spoken about it before, but it just really popped me when I saw Jeff Hardy doing his little dance to the ring. Every time I see it, I'm like, how did anyone think this was cool or fun? It just looks like the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, nothing has dated as badly as Jeff Hardy's dance as he comes to the ring. So yeah, a 4 for me out of 10. A badly booked show in a number of different ways. The tournament was poorly booked. The world title picture was poorly booked. Just titles in general flipping all over the place, seemingly for no reason. Just a bit of a nothing show. And it's a disappointment for a show from the year 2000, because as you listed off, Alex, there's a number of good ones. I mean, even the Backlash show was really good, where The Rock and Triple H face each other and Austin comes back briefly to do his bit. But yeah, this was just not. This was just not very interesting at all. Well, what a flat way to start the new series of shows we've got going on, guys. The next one will be with everyone in 2 weeks' time. Old man, Alex, thank you very much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you very much. It's not been the most exciting step into the new era, but we can definitely say with 100% certainty it is a new era. And I like to christen it the Ken Patera era, because you've got to rate him. Hang on, what have you got to do? Got to rate him, got to review him. Hang on, what? Rate, review. And then you've got to remember him, and you've got to try and remember your spiel at the end of the show, or else you look like a right knob.
Yeah, that's been your catchphrase for about 3 years now, and
can't quite get it right. To me.
I can't follow that. Thank you very much. See you again soon.
This has been the Random Wrestling Review. We'll be back again next week with another special episode, but until then, take care.
Trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8 by 12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road. Third boxcar, midnight train. Destination Bangor, Maine. Oh, worn out suit and shoes. I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found. Short but not too big around. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road. I know every engineer on every train. All of the children and all of their names. And every handout in every town. And every lock that ain't locked when no one's around. I sing trailers for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom. Buys a 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road. Trailers for sale rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8 or 12.